Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
All right, so this is the second part of our post-debate analysis. We're going to rattle through the last three segments, and we're going to start with the race relations and the law and order segment.
If this doesn't turn your guts, I don't know what will. We have had unrest for a long time. We have seen people dying in the streets. We have seen cops getting away with blatant murder. We have just happened in Brianna's case where they didn't even ask for the homicide in the grand jury, right? And then to come out and say things like, I don't know, I'm all about law and order, or Trump boasting about how every single police union has endorsed him. Right then and there, Biden should have been like, well, I'm going to defund you. He didn't say that, though.
No, he said, I wanted to fund them more.
I want to give them more money. Oh, okay. The people that are going to have the energy to knock on the door and get the vote out are not going to take kindly to the fact that you're not going to defund the police. But at the same time, who's going to vote?
And who's going to knock on doors and go door to door? Like, who cares? Nobody's going to do
that. Who cares? It's Corona season. No one's going to do that. Yep. So, I mean, from a point of view, I mean, it makes sense that he's going to do this one or go to the law and order part of it. But the whole passage was pretty nasty fascism.
Yeah, it was terrible. Biden started off with like all the right answers. If it's about equity and equality, and then kind of chastised Trump for his very fine people on both sides thing with Charlottesville and then the whole like church Bible segment. Then Trump went immediately to the crime bill and said Joe hates black people, which, I mean, is a fair critique, but in the context of what Trump is doing, it's...
The crimes bill is something that Biden can't get rid of. Trump could have come out and said, how many families are being broken up right now because you passed a crime bill that focused on policing and not on, like, you know, healing or drug prevention, things like that, or economic justice. You focus purely on locking people up. Now, Trump will never say that because he's a racist and he's not empathetic to the actual cause. But it also shows how little Biden gives a shit about the crime bill because he wants to give more money to police. So really, you have two candidates who don't give a shit about minority candidates at all. The Democratic Party is going to keep using the black vote to just vote, take advantage of them, which is when Trump says that, it's a fair critique. And you have another group of people who hate black people because they're different. I mean, he talks about like real fascism. We'll come into these cities and stop them right away. And that's pure fascist mentality that you're going to come in and break up a protest.
And Trump kept saying shit like, well, you won't even say the words law enforcement. But like his whole critique of, well, you did the crime bill in 1984 is like, that's fucking law enforcement. Like, you can't say he opposed law enforcement when he did this draconian law enforcement bill and then say you won't say law enforcement.
Yeah. And then he just basically, I don't know, talks about how much he hates people, right? That you just hate. You hate the left is going to do this, left's some violent thing. That was a common thing, a common, I guess, phrase of the whole thing was just how scary the left is, how scary the left is. When really it's the right that's doing most of the damage. And it came up, Chris Wallace asked him to, you know, discuss or state that, you know, racism's bad or the right wing militias should are bad or whatever, right? Denounce them. And Trump says one of the scariest things that he says, stand down and stand by.
To the Proud Boys, which is basically a neo-Nazi group.
Neo-Nazi group, the Proud Boys, stand down and stand by, which is actually a fairly scary thing, which the president has now a private militia that he can call upon to do his dirty work. And this is actually, I think, more telling than you can ever see at any other time of what the Proud Boys really are, which is an armed fascist group, which is the arm of the presidency.
Yeah, it was by far the most scary line in the whole debate.
Yeah. And then I think that gets passed over. I mean, the media is not going to talk about it, right? You had the whole trying to frame Antifa as the same way as right-wing shooters, which is... Yeah, whatever. We don't like fascists, but yet we're just as bad as fascists. I mean, I don't actually understand that one.
Biden did say Antifa is an idea, and then he backed away from a complete police state by talking about community policing, which is, I guess, progress when compared to full and complete fascism like Trump was advocating.
He did call out, Biden did something interesting, which I thought was pretty, you know, pretty cool. He came out and talked about the suburbs dog whistle.
Yep.
Which was a pretty good, you know, attack on Trump. Saying this is the 1950s.
You wouldn't know a suburb if you took a wrong turn. Something like that's the only way you'd wind up in a suburb.
Yep. So he basically took away the part that Trump was any part of the suburbs And he kind of took away the idea that the suburbs are in danger from people protesting in the streets. Biden didn't do a good service or a good job of population density discussion, in which, of course, some of these cities have higher crime rates, but they're not. It's per capita, right? And if we take a look at like Utah or other places, it's per capita. And if you have 8 million people versus 200,000 people or 2,000 people, that would have been a lot more coherent discussion. But I think he was just going for pure talking points, and it's pure fascism on both sides. Just this law and order stuff is super scary to me.
Yeah, Trump dropped a line about something like 53 people got shot in Chicago. And it's like, okay, well, Chicago is a big-ass city of millions of people. People getting shot there is bad, but let's look at it per capita. And I think Chris Wallace raised some, I don't remember what the states were, but I think Tulsa was one of them, of crime is going up kind of nationwide. Is it a partisan issue? And Trump was like, oh, I think it is.
Well, Trump gets his talking lines from racists who are going to, you know, like the talking, what the hell is that asshole? Charlie Kirk's group.
Talking points, USA. Toilet paper, USA.
Toilet paper, USA, yeah.
And then this segment ends by Biden talking about how he's been tough on Putin and how his son Bo was in the military and, you know, worked really hard and earned some medals and, you know, was a patriot. And Trump transitions back to calling his kid a coke addict and some other stuff. And then Biden clarifies and goes, oh, that was my son, Bo. And Trump's like, oh, I don't know, Bo. Like, Trump just realized that Biden has two kids.
That was actually pretty incredible. Especially because he couldn't stop. Like, the Trump train had left the tracks, guys. That's a lot of tease there. He couldn't stop talking. When he was given the premise that Biden has two kids and he shouldn't just dunk on the same kid without realizing it, like, yeah, it was over with.
I don't know Bo, but I know Hunter.
I know Hunter's a bitch, dude. That's what I know. Hunter's a drug addict. You know, and this is probably where I realized, and maybe it was a previous segment, where Biden, though, turned his head and looked at the camera a lot, and it freaked me out.
Like, he became aware of his surroundings.
Trump had, like, the more debate look looking over at. Yeah, he's looking around and talking to Biden. Biden would look dead nuts into the camera and start talking to you. And it was really just bone-chillingly unsettling.
So then the next thing they talked about was climate change. And this was right after the rough transition of Trump just bagging on Hunter. And Joe said something like, yeah, I'd like to talk about climate change. And it's like, yes, Joe, we know. You'd like to talk about anything else other than Trump just dribbling all over your fail son kid.
So Trump says the craziest right-wing insanity, which is, I want clean water and clean air.
Crystal clear. Crystal clear. This is my favorite part of the whole debate.
You just want crystal clear Pepsi? I mean, water? You know, I think this is the part where I realize that Trump is probably pretty good at bullshitting people for 15 minutes. And then as soon as you make him talk for 15 minutes on one topic... he can't, like, handle that type of sort of, like, depth that you have to in order to get through it all. Because he went to this really weird forest trope, like, the entire time. The misconception that if you just had a big enough vacuum cleaner, you could clean the forest floor with a vacuum, and then it wouldn't be any more forest fires.
But we need to do better forest management in order to do that.
There's just so many trees. And he says some nonsense, like, we planted a billion trees.
No, it's the billion tree project. We haven't done it yet, but we're going to do it.
We're going to do it. And I think I laughed at this point in time because it felt like he just made up a new project name that they're just going to go pass a law real quick. Like in every state, like there's going to be 27 states that tomorrow are going to have membership in the billion tree project. They're all going to pledge 100,000 trees or something stupid to it. It was so bonkers bananas that I laughed at a bunch of other stuff, but this one really caught me off guard. We have a billion tree projects. Okay. Yeah.
Like, the debate ended, Trump got on the phone, called up Pelosi and Schumer, and was like, we need to do WPA. And they were like, I mean, we don't really want that, but, like, okay. And then it was like, we're going to plant a billion trees. And everybody was like,
good morning. Sunday morning.
And Pelosi reboots again.
Yeah. And that's why we don't have a billion trees.
You know, and I think the other market-driven insanity here, too, is that environmental policies drive up costs. And that, I think that's been an argument since, like, the 1900s.
Yeah, Trump went on some incoherent rant about, like, we have to have new cars.
you know, being environmentally friendly or cleaning up your mess is going to drive up costs. And that's fundamentally untrue. And Trump pushed that same idea here, that if you have fuel economy or alternative energy, that everything's going to go up in price.
Yeah, he rambled about safer cars for like 5 minutes.
That's all he talked about. And I think what the premise is here, and this is again what we and the left agree with, which is that there is a fundamental, you know, disparity between those that have and those who have not. So those, when he talks about the 12-year-old cars on the road that don't have the same environmental standards as a newer car, that's because of inequality. Because an individual can't go out and buy a new car. And I think that's what's missing here, is that he's basically arguing for communism by making sure everybody had the ability to have the same car.
Everybody buys one car.
Yeah, well, not only the car, you can trade your car and get a new car. But if you don't have finances for it, you can't do it. So the argument here is that if you drive up the price of the car, you can't afford new cars. And so the whole idea of environmental regulation stagnates because people are still driving around in 1985, you know, Buick, something large, which has poor fuel economy, where any of the new fleet vehicles that are super lightweight and have better crash, you know, zones and everything else, airbags and safety features are there. It's the same argument we can make about ADAS and, you know, or the automated driving, same thing about electric vehicles, that only the privileged can get them. But the issue is that he was arguing against federal regulations because he's using this fear as a way to allow private industry to make more money, not to help you, which is what's super fucked up.
Yeah, like he walked very close to having the actually like correct answer and then went in the completely opposite direction.
Yeah, he just pivoted hard. And it's the mental gymnastics you have to make in order for something like this to work out in your favor.
And it was super incoherent too as he was explaining it. Yeah. Like I don't think that I'm going to say your average voter like picked up on what he was saying, like at all.
Yeah, no one's going to understand what I just said to them unless they went through the thought process and the systems level of why the cost is there. Because he didn't explain it.
No, he was just like, oh, we can't make people buy new cars that have better regulations because that would be bad on industry. Or it would be bad for people that can't afford them. But he didn't make that very basic like class leap.
Yeah, if you said we can force you to buy a car that's less than 5 years old and it's going to cost you X amount of money, then yeah, that makes sense. But to say like, oh, it's going to drive up costs and you won't buy it, just he's missing the whole point as to why there's no one buying cars.
Right. And then we also have to take out the cows.
Well, I mean, a lot of this was fear-mongering again, the Green New Deal, $100 trillion.
Yeah.
And so I don't actually think he understands how money works.
Mm-mm.
Because, I mean, that's just inflationary there, right? Just like our psychopath best friend Biden says things like, oh, we'll have all these better jobs. Well, you can't pay prevailing wages to everybody because that's communism.
Right. Which, he's like, not $15. We want prevailing wages,
which is it's a shout out to our best friends of the unions. But at the same time, what he's talking about is basic communism where everybody gets the same wage.
Yeah.
Which, no problem with it. We're not arguing against it. What we're just saying is that, you know, from his mouth, it's severely insane.
Because it's not what he means.
That's not what he means. No, it's not at all. Biden has no way of knowing what this means, right? And neither does Trump. No, nobody has it. I mean, nobody understands what's really going on here, because what they're just trying to do is just pander. They're just pandering to things that they think you want to hear in hopes that you're going to vote for them, right? And this is where you have to really understand the difference between, am I going to be a harm reductionist or an accelerationist? Because in the end of the day, that does matter. That choice does matter.
And then Biden drops the drop a nuke in a hurricane line.
That was pretty cool. Because all Trump has to come out and say is that I just misunderstood the science. Right? That's it.
Or just deny it.
Just deny it. Yeah, who gives a shit?
But he said something like that was a joke or something.
Yeah.
But that was sarcasm.
And that's what he has. He had a hard time admitting failure or defeat like that. And you know, no one's going to expect that the president of the United States knows everything. Now, he's so unintelligent that he has no way of actually knowing that he's right or wrong. He just doesn't know.
He's the perfect Donald Rumsfeld candidate.
He's perfect. He
doesn't know the unknowns.
Yeah, you don't know, right? He's perfect.
And then this segment concluded by Trump saying Biden called all military people stupid bastards, and then he said, "I would never say that," and Joe is just over there going like, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah.
And then he said that you just lost the radical left. And
you lost the radical left, yep.
Joe is just like totally confused this segment, and okay. So I think Trump diffused a lot of like Joe Biden's potential dementia moments by being absolutely fucking incoherent to the extent that nobody listening actually knew what the hell was going on. So it made Biden's cluelessness like appear normal.
Yeah, I think this is where both candidates are getting worn out from the debate. I think Trump doesn't have anything beyond vacuuming up the floor of the thing, all the insane tropes. Biden made it very clear he's not for the Green New Deal, even though he said the Green New Deal would do this. And then Trump said something like, "Well, did you just say Green New Deal?" And he goes, "Well, no, it's the Biden plan." Okay. So now we have two people who absolutely are just fucking out of their goddamn minds. No idea what's going on.
Then we transitioned to the last topic, which was election integrity. Joe started off, and he had some pretty decent answers of, we just need to let people vote. There's no evidence of mail ballots being fucked with. And Trump's just trying to scare people. And then Trump was like, yeah, I'm trying to do all of those things. So let me rant on this.
Holy shit, Trump went actually harder than I thought he was going to go. Trump literally went fascist right-wing Trump speech. Like candidacy Trump speech. Not like presidential debate, but just full-blown, I'm going to delegitimize this entire election cycle. I'm going to bring up all of these talking points that, you know, are put up on like Reddit and 4chan and just insanity. All of these insane things that have no truth to them, or partial truths, right? And I'm just going to go hard authoritarian. And from that point of view, I think he accomplished what he needed to. I don't think he won the segment because I'm not for that, but I believe he accomplished what he wanted to do.
He laid the groundwork for there being some election shenanigans. He said, this is going to be fraud like you've never seen.
Never seen. 50 billion people already voted fraudulently. People are getting, you know, not getting an election. Unsolicited. That's what you should do. You should have to solicit it. Which basically means he's trying to delegitimize every single state that's put in place automatic mailing of absentee ballots.
And then, so Trump said some, like, bad things happened in Philadelphia. There was discussion about, like, oh, we need to have poll observers.
Yeah, that was really fascist-y, too. That was scary about how they were kicked out the other day. That was one of the other scary parts. The Proud Boys, and then now he's calling an army of, like, private poll watchers to come. It's the same thing the Republicans try to do under Bush Jr. The Libertarians did under the Tea Party to try to get people fear-mongering. And it was almost like a bully tactic. Like, you can't vote here because we're going to bully you. And they're going to do that. They're going to try to make it, they're going to go to black communities, they're going to bully you. And that's what it's going to be. And they're going to try to drive you away, and I don't even know what to say or do here, because it's basically all out, like, a civil unrest if people are going to bully you for electioneering.
Yeah, Trump's decided that he wants to win.
Yep. Trump, at this point in time, Trump will do anything to win. And things like, it might take months for us to count the vote. Up until like November 10th to get it mailed in. Like, he did a lot to lay the groundwork. And then he wasn't scared to say the Supreme Court. Again, remember, John Roberts stole it for Bush. He was not afraid to say that the Supreme Court may help him win. And I think that's why he's saying unsolicited votes. I believe what he's doing is setting the legal precedent, legal groundwork, so when they challenge it, it'll be unsolicited. Did you solicit this vote? Yes or no?
Yeah. Did you request a ballot and did you vote? And then they can say, well, I didn't ask for a ballot. Well, how can we be sure that you
voted? Yep.
And then Joe ended the whole debate and the whole segment by basically just saying, like, we can count ballots. We've been doing this for years. It's within our capacity. So, like, let's just let the states do it. And then Trump tried to argue, and the moderator was like, and we're done.
And then Trump babbled for about 13 more seconds, right?
Yep. And then Chris, like, rebooted and, like, did the outro again.
Yep, it was over with. What a shit show.
Who won?
Who won, Biden? I think, and if you watch the Real Clear Politics Insanity, you would know that the guy is pretty much right. Like, nobody really won because nobody's going to be swayed by this vote. I think a lot more people were swayed to vote for Biden than to vote for Trump in this one.
I think the narrative was that Biden, you know, has to do really well at this debate, or otherwise, you know, he has dementia and we can't vote for him because of this, that, and the other thing. And I mean, I think he totally dispelled that. Just based on how the dynamics went, doesn't mean he is, you know, perfectly lucid, but he's certainly able to deal with absolute incoherence for an hour and a half.
And I think one of the shocking points for me was that he didn't come off like Joe Biden under Obama. He actually separated himself a little bit, not a lot. it was some fairly, you know, separate things. And I think that actually may have helped Biden to say, I'm a different president. Now, whether or not it does help him, I don't know. Because I kind of feel like Obama, you know, at this point in time, maybe a lightning rod, but also maybe a great, like, you know, champion for the Democratic Party. So I don't know where he should have been on this one.
I mean, if you're Biden, your game plan could literally be just to win everybody that voted for Obama, and you'd probably win.
And you'd probably win. That wins every state. But the problem, though, is swing votes, right? Does it win Michigan? Does it win Pennsylvania? Does it win Ohio? Does it win Indiana? Does it win Wisconsin, Minnesota? I mean, it's basically the Midwest. And you saw the groundwork today to dispel. I mean, he said everything in the Democratic-run states are bad. Look at Michigan. Look at Pennsylvania. Look at North Carolina.
Portland, I think
Or all swing states. So he's again trying to fearmonger people that are in those districts to be afraid that Joe Biden's going to be the Antifa candidate.
So if you're Joe Biden, do you even participate in the next two debates?
No, I would say that because you guys can't even take care of this, you guys can't control him. There's no reason to debate. I would do the Nancy Pelosi argument that you know what, Trump, we shouldn't legitimize Trump. Because it only takes a couple minutes for us to get Joe Mencia going, JoeMencia.org, going, because that's all it takes for you to really rip the veil off of his brain.
Yeah, and you survived this debate without any devastating, terrible, like, rebooting moments where he looks like he's completely in over his head.
No, I really think that he could probably say no. From game theory point of view, no. Because what's he going to do for policy? Because now the next debate, he's got to dig deeper. If you're Joe, do you really want to talk about your policies?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
You just want to be not Trump and not a, like, and I don't know who's going to watch the second one.
I just know it's fucking bonkers. It was so fucking goddamn bonkers that I don't even know what you got out of it. You got a basically a tit for tat crybaby shit the entire time.
Yeah, they're both, like, kind of incoherent, but, like, at the end of the day, like, Joe, if you want to compare them, like, side by side and, like, have hopes and dreams or whatever that anything they say is actually going to be implemented, isn't the world that Joe Biden paints vastly, like, preferable to Trump's?
100%. Yeah, it's almost a harm reductionist argument, right?
Yeah, like, it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, if you're watching this and you have to choose between A or B, like, you're choosing Biden.
Every day. All day.
And then it's like, whether do you want to participate in electoralism? Do you want to vote for a rapist?
You know, at the end of the day, are the institutions at the national level something you care about? And that's where this comes in. If you're in a state that's fairly well-funded, so you're California or something, I don't know, does it matter? New York? I mean, does the blue states even care?
I don't think the blue states care.
I think Kentucky cares, because Kentucky's reliant on the federal government beyond anything else in the world. I think Tennessee cares. Right, they have to have the right wing in power because that's their structure.
Yep.
But I think if you're a blue state, besides Texas, I mean, you know, Texas is not a blue state, but they're the only really self-funded states. Do you really care? I mean, you care more at the state and local level at this point in time, in my brain.
And, I mean, Biden tried to bring up some of the Supreme Court stuff with Roe v. Wade and abortion, whatever, but I don't think he made a great case. I mean, he said she's a very fine person.
Yeah, and it's always been traditionally state rights. And so, again, if you just focused on battleground states and making sure that you own the electorate in your state, abortion will always be legal.
Yep.
It's the fact that you lost your state legislature that you have to rely on the federal government to protect your right. And that's the problem with a non-powerful centralized government or a centralized government that's designed for capitalism and not for the people, is that you're always going to have these psychopaths that are taking federal power to really fuck you over.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.